The Late Debate with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
The truth that dare not speak its name. Does a no-deal Brexit guarantee a hard border? Healthcare and homeless children, the latest stark revelations. And taking leave of their senses. Why has the Social Democrats' bill on parental leave stalled in the Senate? All that and more on tonight's Late Debate. But first the news with Ray Kennedy. Thanks, Ray. Good evening and welcome to The Late Debate with Katie Hannan. Joining us tonight, we have Deputy Lisa Chambers of Fianna Fáil, Senator Tim Lombard of Fine Gael, Social Democrats Councillor Jennifer Whitmore, Professor John O'Brien of Maynooth University and Lise Hand of The Times Ireland Edition. Now, we want to hear from you, so please get in touch. You can text us on 51551, email us on latedebate@rte.ie or tweet to @latedebaterte. Well, with 66 days to go now, the government was addressing the clear and present danger that is a no-deal Brexit with plans to publish its hard Brexit legislation on Friday. But it was the question of a hard border which continued to dominate today. This morning, the European Commission spokesman, Margaritis Skinas, stated what he clearly saw as the reality of the situation.
If you like me to push me and speculate on what might happen in a no-deal scenario in Ireland, I think it's pretty obvious you will have a hard border.
Well, clearly nobody here wants a hard border, but what if it's unavoidable? Here's Minister Simon Coveney.
The Irish government will not support the re-emergence of border infrastructure on this island. We're not planning for it in no-deal Brexit planning, but certainly if we don't have a withdrawal agreement, it becomes very, very difficult to prevent that. And we would need to work closely with the European Commission and the British government.
Simon Coveney there speaking earlier today. Lisa Chambers, this has been a bit of a dance now. This, are we planning for a hard Brexit? Are we planning for, are we expecting there to be a hard border? What do we, what happens if we they do crash out? And, you know, what have we got in place for that? Do you believe that what Simon Coveney said there in that clip, that they are not, that we are not actually planning for a hard border?
So on that particular issue, I have asked the Taoiseach in face-to-face meetings, one-on-one, are you doing any contingency planning whatsoever for a hard border? And I have been told categorically no. I have no evidence to suggest that they are. Certainly any of the parliamentary questions I've tabled or questions in the Dáil, I get the same answer. On the other hand, though, is it credible to think that conversations at the very least are not happening as to what might happen on the 30th of March? I don't think it's credible that any government will be in a situation where they have no clue what might happen in the event of a no deal the day after. So I think last week when we heard the private conversation that became public between Shane Ross, Minister for Transport, and the Taoiseach, and the Taoiseach saying, you know, because Shane Ross had essentially said there would be checks if there was a no-deal Brexit and trucks were coming from Scotland into Northern Ireland and coming down to the Republic. And the Taoiseach was caught on tape saying, you know, we can't be the government that brought in a hard border, that reintroduced a hard border. And Shane Ross said, well, sorry, I didn't know what to say. So either, two things there, either Shane Ross isn't being briefed the same as other cabinet members, maybe there's a sub-cabinet within the cabinet, but clearly conversations are happening somewhere, but they are certainly not being relayed, the details of that are not being relayed to anyone else in the Oireachtas.
But, and I should have pointed out when I was introducing you, Lizzie, obviously you are the Brexit spokesperson for Fianna Fáil, so yeah. You would expect if anybody was being briefed apart from outside government, you should be top of that queue.
Yeah, and I mean, I attend the stakeholder meetings. I have made the point that the stakeholder meetings that are convened at the Taoiseach's request at a time and date that suit him, and that's fine, that really the speech given by the Taoiseach at those meetings, we don't get new information. I mean, I can read it in the papers that morning. The valuable part of those actually is engagement with stakeholders like Bord Bia, IDA, Enterprise Ireland. That's been valuable. I've also had separate briefings with the Taoiseach and his team, one-on-one.
And you say to him in those briefings, look, Simon, you know, surely we're all grown-ups here. We all understand that there are perhaps certain things that cannot be said on a public forum. But, you know, we have to surely have some plans in place in case the worst
of our fears comes to pass.
Yeah, I mean, I have asked several times and I continue to ask. So I suppose from an opposition perspective, my job is to ask questions and to keep, I mean, to scrutinise government and how they're dealing with Brexit and how they're planning for Brexit. I do ask the questions. I get the same stock answer, be it in a parliamentary question, in the Dáil, or even in those face-to-face briefings. And, you know, even in terms, just give an example, the Brexit legislation. We're only getting heads of bill published on Friday. Germany, France, the Netherlands, Czech Republic all have published the full legislation. We haven't even seen a draft bill. So there is an element of, there's lots of optics, lots of good PR, lots of briefings, lots of meetings. But the substance of those meetings, the actual detail in the reports that we're being given. And another example, last week Cabinet met on Tuesday to discuss four key areas, transport, medicines, social welfare and recognition of professions. I asked directly, can I have a copy of those briefings? I was told I would get a briefing note on the four areas. I'm still waiting. So this idea that we are getting all of the information that is available is simply not true. That is just a fact. We are asking the questions, but we're being drip-fed information. And I suppose I would ask the question, why the secrecy? If you're doing all
but
this planning,
there is. I mean,
tell people.
I'll ask Lise's hand there beside you. Surely there is a reason for some secrecy. If we show our hand in exactly what we overheard Simon Coveney explaining to Shane Ross last week, if we acknowledge that we are planning to, you know, for potentially having infrastructure on the border, for putting checks in place, that you then become the government and you then take that problem away from Westminster, because you'll have the likes of Jacob Rees-Mogg saying, it's not a problem. Sure, they're working on that. They're sorting.
You're trying to read between the lines as to what might be going on behind closed doors. I appreciate the sensitivities around these negotiations and the need to ensure that we play our best hand. But when you hear things, I'll just finish my point, Tim.
Very quickly now, because we
the point I'm making is that other countries have already published details of planning, have published legislation. The Thornish's answer on the border issue is that it'll be a challenge to solve afterwards, and there'll be a reliance on negotiating with the EU and the UK to solve that politically.
Okay.
But there's no further detail as to what that
might be. Tim is shaking his head there.
Clarity here. Number one, the leader of the opposition was briefed this afternoon or this evening on the Hexa bill and all the legislation. So Micheál Martin has been brought
to. I just want to clarify before we move on, because Lise Chambers is saying that's not true. Was Micheál Martin briefed on all the legislation?
So the Taoiseach met this evening with the party leaders on Brexit. The legislation was discussed, but the bill isn't. No one's had sight of the bill. That's
my
just
understanding
a fact.
That he was briefing the Hexa bill to see.
Yeah, but that's the point that Lisa was making.
And it's also important we should
note.
Is
that good enough at this stage when other European countries have published all their legislation?
If I could finish, the other point is, right, Micheál Martin said today in the Record Dáil that Taoiseach and the Taoiseach were very forthcoming with information. So if we have both of them, that's a complete conflict to what we've just heard here this evening. The leader of the opposition said that today. That's exactly what he said today. And that is what we've been told.
So you're saying Micheál Martin said in the Dáil today that they were very forthcoming with information on the same day that Lisa and her colleague were out on the plinth saying that there was an issue with the flow of information.
No disrespect, you clearly misheard they were not forthcoming.
Well, there's a real conflict here, because if you take, we've briefed the actual leader of the opposition on the Hexa bill, and we've actually, there's been, like, that issue.
But can you just address that issue that Lisa raised there? She's saying that she's acknowledging that there has been a briefing on the Hexa bill, but she's saying that at this stage of the game, we should know what the actual legislation is. Look, it is not good enough.
This is timing.
Given
this
how close have, to the we deadline we are
the,
now.
The Chief Whip has put time aside for the next few weeks to go through all this legislation. We've cleared an awful lot of the legislation off the board, so time is going to be given to actually go through it in detail. This is timed, that if it does happen, we have the ability to get it through the Parliament. This is about timing as well. It's not about, you know, informing everyone for the sake of it. There has to be some security about what the information is as well.
Lisa.
Well, I think I have a distinct recollection, Katie, of, I think it was January 2017, of a very grim-faced Taoiseach Enda Kenny standing side by side on government building steps with Theresa May, and the two of them parroting about a frictionless border. And it was quite clear that Taoiseach wasn't buying it then, and certainly nobody was buying it then. There has been this, I suppose you want to call it, piece of magical thinking where Everybody knows that if there's a crash out, that there is going to be some class of border.
But nobody was allowed to say it.
But nobody was allowed to say it because for the very reason you elucidated there a couple of minutes ago, as soon as the government gives way on this, as soon as they allow a chink of the possibility that they are prepared to deal with the consequence of setting up a hard border, it will completely tilt the delicate balance of negotiations that are ongoing between Brussels and London, and the Brexiteers will see this as a way in saying, well, sure, look, if they're going to take care of it, what's the point? That just gets us off the hook, so we might as well crash out. We what's the use of a backstop? So the government have been in this massive bind where they absolutely have had to hold the line, even when it flies in the face of logic. And I would be fairly sure that deep in the bowels of government buildings, there is a small committee that, tap on the door with a secret sign and go in and have a discussion about what they're going to do, in the event of a border. I'd say that there are discussions that have been kept very tight, and I would possibly not all the cabinet know about them. It is quite possible. If you go back to the last government where they had the inner cabinet, if you remember that, there was Enda Kenny and, the Taoiseach, and, there was much grief about the fact there was an inner cabinet within that. But
just the Fine Gael members.
It could be just keeping it very tight. But I think everybody accepts that there probably is. But the trouble is that the government have to hold this line. They absolutely, in the face of logic, have to say we are not dealing with this. It is not our problem. And I thought it was very interesting when the Taoiseach, the statement tonight where they said, in the event of a no deal Brexit, we will have to have very difficult discussions with our EU partners. Now, I mean, that's pretty strong language. They're basically saying it's not our problem, boss. It's, this is a border in Ireland, but it's not the Irish border. So
it's going to be the EU frontier, basically.
Yeah.
Jennifer, do you accept there what Lise is saying? That it may be frustrating, it may be a bit of magical thinking, but the government is in a very difficult position. That if they do acknowledge what we all believe has to be the case and what was acknowledged in Brussels today, that it would compromise the negotiations at the stage they are at now.
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely agree with what Lisa's saying. I think that even if you mention it, it becomes a possibility and it'll grow legs. So I think that it's very, very important that we do not engage in that at all, that we hold the line on.
Is Fianna Fáil wrong then to do what they were doing today, to be out there demanding more information, definitive?
I would have hoped that we were all sort of wearing the one jersey on this, and that there was briefings perhaps between Micheál Martin and, that something
was happening. Just to be clear, this morning on the plinth when I was out to discuss the issue, what I was calling for was, I suppose, details of all contingency planning, because we're still lacking in a lot of detail. That is my job. I'm not wearing the green jersey, of course I am, but it's my job to ask questions. And just to give you an example around the briefings that we get, when the government's contingency action plan was published on December 19th, just before the Christmas recess, it was published at 10 minutes to 9. And the House rolls 10 minutes later for the Christmas recess. I know for a fact the media got that document before I did. So I think that's wrong. And it's that, yeah, that kind of carry on.
What I was asking Jennifer Whitmore to comment on is, you have been demanding more information. You have been saying we need more explicit word on what's in this legislation, what's going to happen with the border. I'm saying, Jennifer, do you think that that is going to be ultimately unhelpful to the Irish position?
I think that's probably too much too soon at this point. I think I know you're sort of referring to other EU countries that have published everything, but we are in a very different position than them. So I do think that we have to come at this, I suppose, a lot more closed and absolutely not countenance any hard border, and that has to be our position up until the very last minute.
I suppose,
and
on the legislation, not a border issue. That's more the 17 sectoral areas, is like things at the common travel area. So it's more basic than that.
I just want to let John O'Brien in, because we haven't heard from John.
Can I say firstly that there's been a marked contrast between the two jurisdictions, that up to this point in time, the Irish political parties have rowed in behind the government, and I think Lisa and her colleagues deserve enormous credit for the way they have behaved. They could have taken advantage of slip-ups at various points in the process earlier. They didn't. But I suppose the division between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael here reflects where we are. We're only less than 70 days away. And I actually think that the Commission spokesman, Mr. Shinas, did us all a favour today by the realism that he injected into the debate. A hard border is going to happen. There will be no alternative. And I think, of course, he came out also, not just because of the time frame, but because of the mad farce that we have seen unfolding in Westminster this past week, as in previous weeks. Now, I think, actually, that all is not lost for Mrs. May's deal. She comes back to Parliament next week on the 29th, on Tuesday the 29th. And I think her strategy has been to try and hive off as many of her own members of Parliament as possible, and maybe a couple of dozen Labour MPs as well. Remember that more than 200 of her own MPs voted with her, so she only needs about another 110, 120.
Quite a few, though.
I don't think it's impossible, because her strategy has been to say to them, look, we are staring down the barrel now, you have to make a decision.
Yeah, did you sense, and was that more magical thinking on some of our part, but that there was a bit of a crack in that in the last couple of days, that some of the harder line,
absolutely.
I think definitely.
Just to finish my sentence, some of the hard line Brexiteers in the Tory party are maybe rethinking their opposition, saying this might be the only Brexit we'll get.
I think you're absolutely spot on. I think that there has been a carefully coordinated ratcheting up of, you know, Project Fear, we'll use it from the government side for this time. You know, you have all these judiciously leaked reports coming out from border force planning, as, you know, there's going to be massive delays going through airports. There's, you know, problem with stockpiling. Ferries are already being co-opted to try and bring in emergency goods. 87% of freight traffic will be diverted from Dover. So you can sort of see where there is a ratcheting up, saying, yeah, this is getting real, guys. You know, you've got to shape up. And she's probably helped as well by the fact that there's still absolutely no agreement on any of the other options that have been put up forward, whether it's for a general election, whether it's for a second referendum, which is also gathering traction, but probably not enough. So again, you know, it may be a case of it is literally the last horse standing in the race by the time the finish line, you know, to
and I think
torture
what she's
metaphor,
trying to
you know,
do,
like
she's trying to say
walked,
that there are
walked.
Three options. There's my deal, there's no Brexit,
there's a people's vote.
Or there's a people's
and
vote.
And they've brought no other real thing to the table. I think that's very obvious. If you look at the debates in Parliament over in the UK, there's been no other real solution brought to the table. They haven't come up with how they're going to solve the border issue. And that's been very, very obvious. Next Tuesday's vote in the UK Parliament and the series of votes that are going to happen that day will surely, hopefully, at long last, give some insight into what they're trying to do or what the majority of the MPs are trying to get out of this process. Because at the moment, it's just been bizarre.
And in Fine Gael, as of now, is there still a hope kept alive that Mrs. May will get her deal over the line?
Well, that is
some shape
what we're
or form.
Hoping for, and that's what we're working towards. Like, the European Union have been very strong behind us. Like, this deal has even been passed by the UK, by the Cabinet itself. It's her deal, it's the UK, it's our deal with them. And we need to try and make sure that she gets this across the line. It's the best deal and it's the only deal on the table.
What could we do to help her get it across the line, Lisa?
I suppose if you look back over the last 2 years, there's probably been a few times where we maybe put the boot in unnecessarily, if I'm being honest. I think it's quite interesting when you hear the Brexit Secretary, Mr. Barclay, saying that, you know, he didn't think that an extension of Article 50 beyond March 29th would be granted in the absence of a plan as to how to move forward. So we have this reliance here that, OK, the deadline's approaching, but sure, it'll be extended, won't it?
I was going to put that to you. There is this feeling that that's not really a real deadline at all.
I think that's part of Theresa May's strategy. She doesn't want to talk of an extension. She wants that deadline. She wants that cliff
edge. She needs that deadline.
Concentrates
mine. If they seek an extension, our government should back that plan or no plan in place, back the extension. But there's a difficulty. Other member states without a plan as to how to move forward may not be so keen to extend Article 50 because we have European Parliament elections in May.
Yeah, we're getting some texts in here. Lisa Chambers' primary interest is in political point scoring and not in providing suggested solutions to help resolve the issue of a hard border. We have another one here. If this is a supply and confidence arranged government, how come Fianna Fáil are not being briefed, says Kevin. And then Larry in Rosslare says, would you all calm down? Britain will remain in the customs union. It probably has been already agreed at official level a few days out from March 29th. This will be announced to great fanfare and political praise.
Well, I love his confidence.
Whoever he is. Hope Larry has it right.
Okay, I want to move on because... Oh, first of all, before I go, I want to ask John about that news today that James Dyson is moving, will be making his electric cars, his latest development of his business in Singapore. And this, of course, follows Jacob Rees-Mogg setting up the fund in Dublin and John Redwood and all those other people advising Michael Ashcroft, all of these people.
Well, it was a terrible day for the UK today because it wasn't just Dyson announcing that they were moving their headquarters to Singapore. It was also Sony announcing that they were moving their headquarters to Amsterdam, P&O Ferries, which is re-registering in Cyprus. There were a whole glut of things announced. But Dyson is really important because he's been a figurehead within industry. He keeps saying it'll be all right in the night. We can revert to WTO rules. All this nonsense.
He was saying just last week nothing will change with a no deal Brexit.
Well, one of the ironies about all this is when he does move to Singapore, he'll enjoy the protection of the EU-Singapore Free Trade Agreement, which was agreed literally a few months ago, which he would not be able to enjoy if he was still based in Wiltshire.
How is this not playing out with... people on the ground.
It's amazing.
People in the UK.
Royally.
It just does not seem to have.
The people of Wiltshire voted to leave.
Duck with people, is it?
There's no trust in politics. It doesn't matter how much you try and scare people and tell them how terrible it's going to be. They just don't believe it.
Well, it's interesting. Somebody who travels.
But I suppose it's the worst. It's journalists and politicians, probably two of the least trusted groups of people in modern.
Academics are enormously trusted in comparison to the rest of you.
Sorry, Lisa.
No, it's just somebody I was talking to said they were sort of travelling around. England for the first time in a few years, and they said it was really noticeable the number of Union Jacks that you see flying everywhere, and there is a sort of a mood, the sort of, you know, of sort of nationalist pride and, you know, up Blighty and we're all great and White Cliffs of Dover and dig up Vera Lynn. I don't know if she's alive or dead, but, you know, this sort of, there's this sort of wave, and, you know, there is it'll be all right at night kind of feeling, you know, we leave and it'll be grand. They'll come,
but
you
there
know,
is a change
they'll come
there.
Looking for us.
But is there not even a bit of masochism in that? Like, if it's bad, it'll be...
But I do think there's been a change.
It's a heart over head issue. It's emotion.
Like the change in the media, in particular in the last maybe two or three days, I think has been amazing in the UK. I think they've now begun to turn, they've begun to talk about the issue of what happens if it does happen, the hard border implications. I think before the media in the UK had this kind of soft approach to it, I think they're now taking this as really it could happen and what happens if it does happen. And I think that's a very, very positive thing. They need to tell that story.
They ignored the border from the very get-go.
Oh, totally.
If you look back, I was writing a column on this last week and I reread the statement made in government buildings the morning after the Brexit referendum, where the government clearly laid out all the priorities and all the potential problems, including, you know, keeping a smooth border. Every single issue that, you know, subsequently rose and, you know, basically were thrown in front of the negotiations were clearly outlined within, I'd say, 12 hours of the result. And they were completely and utterly ignored. They were stepped over. They were, all they saw was the eye of the main prize, which was to get out of the customs union, do their own trade deals. And there was absolutely no thought given to the Good Friday Agreement. And the government is absolutely spot on, with the backing of all the other parties, to reiterate time and time again that the UK are they're co-respondents. They are responsible for the upkeep and the maintenance of the Good Friday Agreement. They have responsibility. They've skin in the game, and this is the first time they've actually had to do something about it.
Was it significant that both Theresa May and Jeremy Corbyn acknowledged, and was the first? It was the first issue they mentioned in their speeches in Westminster, the security situation, the deteriorating security situation in Derry. Was that a very significant, deliberate inclusion?
Absolutely. Yeah. I watched the entire thing, and this came after this sense on Sunday, I think, and Monday, that like the weekend newspapers essentially ignored what had happened in Derry. But I think in reaction
UK
to
papers,
that, as
yeah.
much as, yes, the UK papers, but in reaction to that as much as anything else, it was really noteworthy that they placed it right at the front of their statements. And other MPs did as well in their contribution.
And we were so lucky.
So finally,
like
belatedly, like
so
the only, Lisa's absolutely right, the only point at which this began to matter was after the general election, which Mrs. May made the mistake of calling, mm-hmm. when everybody started Googling what is the DUP, that's when they began to take yeah. Ireland seriously.
On that note, as we're talking about politics north of the border, Lisa, were you at the parliamentary party meeting this evening where we understand a big announcement was made about Fianna Fáil's future arrangements with the SDLP north of the border?
Yeah, and I was there this evening, and Deputy Charlie McConlogue, who has been involved in talks with the SDLP since last summer, updated the parliamentary party as to the conclusion of those talks and the next steps. So it will be a partnership with the SDLP. We will not be running candidates ourselves, and the SDLP councillors will be running under the SDLP banner. But we will be working very closely with the SDLP, a common policy platform on areas where we have, I suppose, agreement. And we're looking at possibly national conferences that we'd run together, and just a closer working relationship. We've been working with the SDLP for quite some time anyways. I would have a very close relationship with them, and I've met regularly with Claire Hannah, their Brexit spokesperson, and similarly with other spokespersons, they would liaise on a regular basis. So.
Was Eamon O'Keefe at the parliamentary party meeting?
I'm not actually sure if he was or not.
He didn't speak anyway, obviously.
He didn't speak. I couldn't be sure if he was there or not.
Because obviously there was tension within the party as regards the Fianna Fáil's future north of the border.
I think the tension is exaggerated, if I'm being honest.
Well, I mean, it was fairly tense if you're going up there nominating Fianna Fáil candidates without the cooperation of the party leadership. That sounds pretty tense situation.
Well, I mean, that was two members of the PP, and there were consequences for that. But we're a parliamentary party of 45, and the response this evening from the news of the next step and the partnership was really widely welcomed. Everyone's very happy with that.
Everyone.
For the most part, certainly nobody expressed anything other than that
publicly.
At PP.
Really have to go to a break, but I just want to ask Lisa.
Yeah, I mean, they were very naughty boys, you know, and I think this is Mark Daly, Senator Mark Daly and Eamon O'Keefe, who went rogue, to use the common parlance, and made an announcement ahead of time. But, you know, look, it's interesting, you know, anything that changes the dynamic of politics in the North is interesting, given the absolute and utter stalemate there. You've just got two sides miles apart throwing rocks at each other. So we'll see how it looks.
Okay, we're going to go to break. But before we go, we have a tweet in. Hi, Vera Lynn is alive and well. She's 101.
Oh,
and despite barely Dover, will be different after Brexit. And we'll take a break.
Email latedebate@rte.ie. The Late Debate with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
And you're welcome back. You're listening to The Late Debate with me, Katie Hannan, and with me here in Studio 10 are Deputy Lisa Chambers of Fianna Fáil, Senator Tim Lombard of Fine Gael, Social Democrats Councillor Jennifer Whitmore, Professor John O'Brien of Maynooth University, and Lise Hand of The Times Ireland Edition. Now, we just have another another tweet in there on our last issue. Surprising to hear panellists on Late Debate argue that the government's no-deal contingency plans should not be discussed in public with 2 months to go. The impact on people's lives should be a transparent debate, not a secret one. That's a tweet from Paul Bradfield. And I have a text in here from Anne in Dublin 13. Guys, why the surprise? As my mother used to say, the English broke the Treaty of Limerick before the ink was dry on the paper. But we will move along. And we want to talk about Roisin Shortall, co-leader of the Social Democrats, and her attempts to bring the parental leave bill through the Oireachtas. The bill would extend the amount of unpaid leave for parents from 18 to 26 weeks per child, and it would allow parents to take this leave until their children are 4 years older than at present. But the bill has stalled in the Senate. Jennifer Whitmore, there's cross-party support for this bill, so what's gone wrong?
Well, there was cross-party support for the bill, I think, is the issue. The Social Democrats published this bill late 2017, and because we had the cross-party support and everyone was so, I suppose, cognizant of how important it was to get this across the line, it made its way through the legislative process quite easily and quickly, and it got through all the stages of the Dáil, and we had it was heard in the Seanad. The Fianna Fáil actually gave us a slot. Catherine Arda facilitated that that, which was great. And it was to be heard again just before Christmas. And we thought everything was still going fine with it. And on the day that it was to be heard in the Seanad, we were told that actually Fine Gael were going to oppose the bill. And so that was the first we had heard of that. And we were unclear and are still unclear, actually, as to why they would be opposing this bill, particularly seeing as they had not opposed it through all the other stages that it had gone through. So
now, I was looking back at the June debate in the Dáil on this bill. And at that stage, the minister, David Stanton, was saying that he was saying there was some concern that there may be a constitutional issue, that the AG had raised a flag that there may be a constitutional issue in relation to putting an onerous demand on employers, you know, this on top of all the other leave arrangements that they have to facilitate. What are you being told now?
We haven't been told anything, actually. I mean, this bill had gone through all the processes required of it, and it had passed them all. There was
such as
no money message. It wasn't going to have any cost impact, because it was an extension of an existing system, so it wasn't going to actually cost anything to implement. There was no pre-legislative scrutiny required of it, and so it was going through everything fine. And so we're still questioning as
well,
to why
see,
actually
if
it was.
If Tim has been told what's going on in his party.
Look, I think. Look, first of all, Fine Gael never voted against this bill. Okay, I think we're fully supportive of this bill and what this bill is trying to do. I think trying to support families, in particular in the first year, is very important.
Sorry, if you're fully supportive of the bill, why did you not facilitate a slot in the Seanad before Christmas?
The problem here is it's to do with something called the money message, which is this bill is going to cost the state money. So because
I'll just let Tim make the point and we can respond.
So
then,
because there is now deemed to be a money message attached to it, in other words...
When was that discovered, that there was a money message attached to this bill?
I think it was discovered by the AG, or it was discovered during the process that this legislation was going to cost actual state money.
So you're saying that this went through the Dáil, the minister spoke on it, and it is now discovered all these months later that there is an issue, that it is a money message.
So where the mistake happened in this...
Can you just explain to people, because people mightn't be aware of the process here, why that would be a problem? If it's going to cost the government money...
If it's going to cost government money, you have to go through pre-legislative scrutiny. And that's where this bill, unfortunately, has just been stalled. I think that's the important thing.
There is absolutely no cost associated with this bill, and that was determined.
Well, my understanding here, right, is when it went to the Justice Committee, there was no pre-legislative scrutiny done. They didn't interview, they didn't bring forward, they didn't bring the departments forward and ask the departments for views. The departments now are saying there's going to be a cost attached to this bill. I'll explain, right? And sorry, not being so...
I'm really interested to hear this.
And my understanding here is that there is a solution here. The solution is that the pre-legislative scrutiny now can be done through a subcommittee of the Seanad over the next month or 6 weeks. It will take a different process in the Seanad, but the bill as itself won't be altered. This, in many ways, has been administration error by the House of Leader Octus or by the government, I'm not too sure. But the real issue here is that the pre-legislative scrutiny that should have happened at the Justice Committee didn't happen. And what really happened here was the department should have been brought before the bill, should have been brought before the Justice Committee, stakeholders should have been brought before it, they should have given evidence. Then, if there was a money issue, which now they determine there is a money issue attached to it.
Can you just explain to me, because I'm just trying to figure out what is the money issue?
My understanding, there's a cost attached to departments if they have to pay out for this.
It's unpaid leave.
My understanding, it comes down to who covers it.
This isn't just an extension of an existing system.
So if you have a person that's going out on unpaid leave, then that person must be covered for it.
But isn't the issue that we have heard from so many people is that...
Can I give you my two cents on what's going on here?
There's administration attached to that. This is really only a technical
issue that will slow down
the bill for a small period of time.
Government
tend to invent money messages to slow these things down or to just kill them off.
I think,
and in terms of, I mean, how there's a money message attaching to unpaid leave is beyond me. You haven't articulated what that is. With respect, Senator, you haven't.
Well, I'll try.
This has crossed party support.
If you give me a moment.
It should have been progressed. That's why Fianna Fáil facilitated the bill in the Senate, because it is a good piece of legislation.
And Fine Gael never voted against it.
I had.
We actually support
what you've
this
done
bill.
Is that you've sent it to the bill's graveyard because, so that it can die a slow death, which is what happens to lots of
bills. If this goes to the President and there's a money bill
we just have one voice. Tim, I'll come back to you and let you back in response to this.
I had a,
you're saying, Lisa, you don't think, do you think that this is sending it to the bill's graveyard, that this will be the end of the bill?
The hope, I think, that they've been lobbied hard by business.
That's
who don't
true.
Want to facilitate dads taking time off. I think that they've realised they've gone too far down the road to deal with that. They're
not
now
true.
Going to delay it. Can I just finish my point, Tim, with respect? I didn't interrupt you. They want to delay this until we have an election and it's just dead, till whenever. I say this because from personal experience, having brought through a shared maternity leave bill before the Christmas, which thankfully was supported by the Social Democrats, the Greens, Labour and Sinn Féin, all parties except Fine Gael, this was to allow the current 6 month maternity leave, that if the woman didn't want to take all of it or any of it, that she could transfer an existing payment, an existing entitlement to her partner. They said there was a money message attaching to it. And I'll tell you what the answer was. Because they'd have to process the applications within the department and somehow it was going to add money to the exchequer. Total nonsense. But again, they will find a money message where they want to find one.
Well, I think for a start, you know, in this doll, which has famously been called Do Nothing, and where we have seen bills filibustered to the point of madness, that when you do have a bill that processed with all due haste, with great all, you know, cross-party support through the doll and then got to the Senate and came screeching to a halt, you would wonder why. And particularly because this was posited as a, you know, this was not going to cost the exchequer any money. So, I know it has the backing of ISMAE, the Small Business Association. Now, I think Roisin Shorthold did indicate that in a briefing she had by David Stanton, who's the minister overseeing this, the Junior Justice Minister, Equality Minister, that I think he suggested that IBEC might have had a problem with it. So,
David Stanton said last June in that debate in the Dáil, this will place a financial and administrative burden on employers in its own right. And to add these 8 weeks to the existing provisions for maternity, paternity and carers leave and existing parental leave entitlements, and the burden becomes significantly bigger.
So you would wonder if, you know, there was a bit of lobbying gone on and said that there will be a cost to this, because there generally seems to be agreement that this is a good bill. It gives great flexibility to, particularly to working women. It's a genuinely a good idea. And this is a government that, you know, are always trading on the fact that they like to be family friendly and so on. Now, if one was cynical, which of course one isn't, one would suggest that if there is an election in the offing, or perhaps a last budget before an election, that this might be something that would be, they would like themselves to actually push, to lay out before the electorate as a and therefore they would like
that. Logical. I really don't think
so. Would Tim is looking very hurt by that.
I mean, it's not on the
graveyard. Tim is looking very hurt that anyone would suggest that Fine Gael would want to put forward a popular vote getting bill themselves.
Can I just come in on that? Can I just come in on that?
I've been trying to do today.
This exact initiative is actually specified in your 5-year childhood plan as one of the first initial actions that you'll be taking. So at this stage, to let it go through a year of process and at the very last hurdle, let parents and working families down.
We're
by
not
saying,
leaving them down.
No, you absolutely
no,
are. I have people coming to me today saying that they have to put in their time. That their time requirements for next year, will the bill be through? Can I ask for leave over the summer so I can look after my children? It is not acceptable for that to happen. The only cost that will be incurred on the basis of this bill is to parents who will take time off unpaid to be with their families and to have some sort of work-life balance. That is the only cost that will be incurred. The Justice Committee said that there was no There was no pre-ledge required. And how was
the day before you broke up for Christmas,
you decide that this is the case? And you've never come to us. You never once came and said, there could be a problem with this. We want to support you. Let's work together across the line.
It's not fair on families. I want to let John in. But first, I just want to ask him how it is, if this is a bill that is a money bill and that did require pre-legislative scrutiny, how did the ministers go through an entire Dáil debate on this? How was it let go through all these stages? At the very least, surely it is an extraordinary administrative lapse on your part to not notice this until the last moments before the bill was due. It's only a few hours away from being implemented or being approved.
The problem with this bill, if it goes through all the houses...
Now, answer that question, Tim. Do you not accept that at this is very late in the day to suddenly spot some administrative issue with it?
Because it was assumed that the process was going to be, like every other piece of legislation... Well, the majority of pieces of legislation...
But did you not notice that hadn't happened?
When it came to the Shannon... It was, in my opinion, I thought this legislation was approved. I wasn't watching it that closely.
Again, I say, is this not an extraordinary lapse to have gone through this late stage of this legislation?
The government actually proposed. It was a piece of legislation that the opposition proposed.
But the minister engaged, laid down amendments, debated with it. You're saying that he did that without realising that the money bill came back.
The House of the Iraq determined that there was a money bill on this,
Who is determined that?
The Taoiseach determines that, not the House of Iraq.
My understanding here is that the House of Iraq.
No, that's not the process. That's just not factually correct. I'm sorry.
So, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong.
John O'Brien.
We are really in Yes Minister territory here. It's where new politics collides with old politics and old politics wins. Fine Gael was hugely keen on all these wonderful new progressive things right up to the moment where it actually won power. And then new politics is completely sidelined. This is a really good bill. All the more so because we were so far behind comparable jurisdictions in Europe. We have made up some ground, if I'm right, Jennifer, but this would help further kind of redress the balance. And who could be against parents having more time with their children when it's actually
That's why I brought a solution to the table here, and I don't think anyone's acknowledged that there is a solution that can be worked through the Shannon to get over the pre-leg scrutiny issue so we can get the money message.
That's a delaying tactic. You want to kill the bill.
We're not trying to delay it, and what we're really trying to do here is we're trying to make sure it happens and happens in a very short
period. Are we not committed to... getting this
and to say we're killing it is totally inappropriate.
That's what you're trying to do.
We're not.
Are we not committed to facilitating all this Brexit legislation over the next few months? How are we going to have time to do this pre-legislative scrutiny on the bill?
Because there'll be a subcommittee set up from the Shannon, which won't be involved directly in the issue. So we're trying to get a process to solve it.
And it'll never be seen or heard from again.
Well, that's only one view. The real view here is trying to sort this issue.
Absolutely.
I can crib, but I'm trying to sort this issue. Look, I'm in that space. I know it's all about we need to find a solution to this bill, and I'm trying to bring that solution forward.
Well, would you not be a bit concerned that it might come back and bite you if this bill disappears down into the graveyard, as Lisa Chambers suggests, and all those parents out there were wondering how they're going to manage next summer.
All you can ever do is try and bring a solution. Some might laugh at the solution, that's fair enough, but I'm trying to find the solution to this, because if it does go forward, does pass House of Iraqis without a money message attached, the President would have the opportunity not to sign it into law.
How come though Roisin Shorthall was sort of on Morning Ireland then scratching her head going, I don't know what happened? Was she not informed at some stage, what the issue was? I mean, she literally, the co-leader of the Soc Dems, the party who brought this forward, was literally on national radio going, I have absolutely no idea why this is screeched to a halt.
No idea
if
money messages attached.
Why was she not informed? I mean, I know it's a PMB, but I mean, still, you think somebody would have just said to her, look, this is the problem, so...
Particularly, the minister referenced having discussions with the AG in relation to the constitutionality of this bill back in June, I would have thought at that stage, if there was any question of a money message being attached to the bill, that it would have been raised.
Can we just say as well, the Attorney General, obviously legal advisor to government, but, there are other intelligent people that can assess this issue as well. All of us here are saying, how on earth can an unpaid leave cause a money message? No one else can answer that question.
If there is a money message,
you can attach a money message if you really want to try and kill it off.
All we can do is try and find a solution rather than give out about having the money message attached.
It might incommode would be maybe the employers who might, and maybe correct, this feeds into it, who might have to try and get work cover or whatever. It might have a cost for them, but that's not really pertinent to putting the bill through.
Those employers will already have systems in place. Like, it is just an extension of an existing entitlement. It's actually been quite eye-opening, the number of parents who are really keen to see this get across. So I actually don't think people will sit back and not allow this.
Is it already in place in the public sector, is that correct?
Up to 13, so the age limit is there. But I mean, I think people are struggling. We know people are struggling, and if you're families, it's very difficult. And I really don't think people will sit back and not let this, you know,
Okay, we're going to move on because there were startling figures from Temple Street Children's Hospital this morning when it revealed that the number of homeless children presenting to its A&E department had increased by 29%. And for many of these children, their reason for coming to hospital was directly linked to the fact that they live in emergency accommodation, where childproofing is hugely challenging. Here's Dr. Ike Okafor, emergency medicine consultant at Temple Street.
We're seeing a lot of scalds and a lot of burns, and I think it's due to the cramped nature of these accommodation. We're seeing falls quite a bit, you know, inside falls. We're also seeing a lot of infections, respiratory infections and gastrointestinal infections, which may be as a result of, you know, the living conditions.
Yes, that's Dr. Ike Okafor there from Temple Street. Tim Lombard, I think this story and that interview stopped a lot of people in their tracks today, because it has put into sharp focus really the danger that children in emergency accommodation are being placed in, and they're being placed in because we have not been able to deliver homes for them.
And look, it was an interview itself, and I actually listened to it this morning. Look, having one child not, you know, properly housed is an issue, but look, it is a big issue, right? 50,000 kids go through that hospital every year, 852, which is too many, you know, we're in that scenario itself. But like, as you're very much aware, we went from an issue where we had no building for 10 years. We're now after turning up the clock. We're now delivering units at a naught, as you can see everywhere. It's going to take time for us to deliver this amount of units itself. There has been major progress made, and I mean major progress. In my own part of the world, we've seen housing estates, either private or social housing estates, being built, and that's happening in every town and village around the country.
And the numbers keep rising.
We've 5,000 people per year taken off the emergency housing list. The problem is there's still people coming into it. It's trying to keep the demand. And we're probably coming to the point that we're going to be nearly off to 25,000 construction units this year, which is a really, really important figure to reach. When you reach that figure, that's where we need to go forward. This is going to take time. It was always going to take time. This is about trying to get a housing.
If it was always going to take time, Tim, why were we assured by the then housing minister last year that by last July there would be no child in a hotel?
Look, all I can say to you is one child in emergency housing is too much. We're trying to, and we are getting the building program in place, social and affordable and private. It's a huge, huge commitment. It's basically turning back on a tap that was closed for 10 years. We've seen major developments in the last 3.5 years, really positive stuff.
Lisa Chambers, do you think we are turning the corner here? Do you see signs that we are somehow, as a country, getting on top of this issue?
If I'm honest, no, I don't see it. Certainly if you come into any constituency clinic across the country, it's a big issue, and it's moved beyond the cities now. I'm in a rural area, I'm in County Mayo. I was trying to find a lady a home there last week. We looked at Ackle, it's an area in Mayo. Not one single property to rent. 38 properties on Airbnb. This is in Mayo now, this isn't urban centres. Huge problems. The HAP limits, as a single woman, she's only entitled to rent a place that costs €390 per month. There is nowhere in Mayo at that price. That problem is replicated right across every county. People are becoming homeless because landlords are leaving the market. The Airbnb issue is huge. We've known this for years. Why are we not tackling it? So getting properties to rent within the HAP system, virtually impossible in likes of Dublin or Cork.
But then, I mean, Lisa, and you know I'm going to say this to you now, because it's been raised, you know, very frequently over the last thing. You are keeping this government and these policies in situ. You are. And when you got the opportunity to have a vote of confidence in the Minister for Housing, you step back from it.
Well, voting in a vote of confidence against a government minister triggers an election. That's the consequence of that. It doesn't deliver more homes. We have extended confidence in supply because of Brexit.
But what you're saying is that a change of government might deliver more homes, because you're saying that this government isn't delivering homes.
Well, I mean, of course we believe that if Fianna Fáil were in government, we'd have more homes. We've got a good record on housing. We built homes in the past. We always did. We could actually be in the middle of a general election right now if other parties got their way, in the middle of all the Brexit crisis that we have. But we made it very clear that were it not for Brexit, there would have been a general election.
Okay, Lise Hand, is this touching Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil to some degree politically? This very hard end of it, the children in emergency accommodation.
Yeah, I think it is. And I think Brexit touches everything. But I think Lisa is right that I think if there was no Brexit crisis now, we probably would be in the middle or facing into or just have just had a general election. And I think it probably would have been over one of the many entangled issues with housing, because housing touches everything. You know, it's homelessness, it's the lack of housing, it's the lack of properties to rent, it's everything. And it now has bled into literally into the health system. And I think a number like this number we were presented with today makes it more real, simply because it's a very graspable number. Sometimes the numbers are very abstract because it's just so big. You know, people talk in terms of thousands and or millions, whereas, you know, you take a number like that and you're thinking of, you know, over 800 children who are sick, possibly a lot of it's, you know, even though they listed out the various causes, we know what stress can do to, you know, the physical body. They're seeing, you know, stressed parents, they're living in cramped conditions, and, you know, just what stress can do. And I think every parent can put their own, you know, project their own child into that situation and imagine the child coming out who's still out, probably not feeling great, and has to go to a strange place and maybe not even know where they're going when they come out. I mean, it's a small tragedy we can all grasp, and that is very dangerous for the government.
When I saw the story this morning, I have to say I thought of Sean O'Casey and the Tenements era. So, you know, we have the intersection of a health system that's perennially in crisis and a housing policy which has been in crisis for some time. But to see that children are having pulmonary issues, respiratory problems, which are very easily presentable, it is really a reflection of this gross failure in public policy. And I think actually the two major political parties are culpable, because, you know, when Fianna Fáil was in power, after, you know, the health service wasn't manifestly different. I remember so well Brendan Gleeson on the Late Late Show in about 2006, and everybody thought that was an inflection point, that things would change. On housing, you remember when poor Jonathan Corrie was founded, everybody thought that's a game changer, it has to change, and it hasn't. So there's some parts of public policy we do really well, and there are others where the gaps are just enormous.
And Jennifer?
I think the reports today and the figures today, I actually think that it's just the tip of the iceberg. You can't put 4,000 children into emergency accommodation, B&Bs, hubs, without it having a long-term impact on their development, on their education, on their mental health, on their social skills. And this is the sort of the start of that, you know. But these children, they will grow into adults, and I think they'll bring this experience with them, and I don't think it'll be good. So I think at this point we not only need to provide them with housing, but we also need to make sure that the services are there to ensure that any long-term impacts that could be with them are actually addressed, because, you know, we can't fail those children again and again into the future.
And all of this, we're spending $2 billion on a lunatic project to spend this great big albatross of a children's hospital when targeted money could be spent much more effectively, I think, to relieve that human tragedy that we're talking about.
Okay, I want to move on, because I just want to give us a few minutes to discuss today's story about the Bethany Homes. Minister for Children Catherine Zappone today confirmed that she had extended the deadline for the commission investigating mother and baby homes by another 12 months. And this decision means that a decision on redress for the survivors of the Church of Ireland Bethany Home, who say that their exclusion from the 2002 redress scheme was on religious grounds, that this has now been delayed again. So on today's News at One, Áine Lawler pressed Minister Zappone on her decision to grant a one-year extension.
Is this not compounding the injustice against them to say, we'll wait until this is all wrapped up? Because it could be, I mean, if we've another interim report in March, you've just given another year's extension. People their age don't have a year to play with.
Again, I'm fully aware of that, Anya, because I have met many of these people. I am aware of the recommendation of the commission. At the same time, they have not provided us with a report in terms of findings, of final findings of abuse or neglect, and so we decided that it was not appropriate to deal with redress.
That was Catherine Zappone there speaking to Áine Lawler earlier on today. I'm going to put this to you, Tim, but I'm going to acknowledge that Alan Shatter refused to include the Bethany Homes survivors in the redress scheme, but before that Rory Quinn also refused, before that a Fianna Fáil minister refused. they are still waiting. And we all know that these people are in a very vulnerable position. Some of them may not last the year to get to where they need to be. And today we were hearing in the Dáil people saying, look, do we not know enough about this to move to the redress stage now?
Look, and I think there's an awful lot of things happening in this space. Look, obviously the survivors are a certain generation and they're looking for information. We're kind of waiting for the report to be published, we have the actual findings. But like, you look what's happening in Tipperary with another dig that probably is going to happen in the next few days. Like, there's an awful lot happening. There is people and there's information coming out. Obviously, this organisation aren't happy, and I understand why they won't be happy, because they're of a certain generation.
They've been battling for so many years now, and they have been knocked back again and again for really what it now even the Commission acknowledges appear to be spurious reasons.
Yeah, but I think there's more information coming forward, and I think that's the reason that they're actually, as far as I'm aware of, that they haven't actually made the findings public with the Commission. The Commission are independent. I think we have to acknowledge that as well. They're independent of government. So we have to, in many ways, kind of wait for that independent analysis to come back before we can.
But we know that they have already said they see no reason why they were ever excluded.
Well, we're waiting for findings. We're waiting for actual information.
Do you think that's fair enough, Lisa Chambers?
I have to wonder sometimes in this country why we make people battle so hard for justice. I mean, we know what happened. We shouldn't discriminate against victims. They should be included. Let's get on with it.
Jennifer, you...
Yeah, I absolutely agree. We have to bring a level of fairness into this and actually start looking and dealing with people with some humanity. You know, so I think I would agree. We just need to get on with
it. Well, I don't think there's absolutely no need to wait to initiate a redress scheme. You know, we know that this report is coming.
And we're talking about a really tiny number of people here, right?
And I think also there's absolutely no reason to wait, you know, for these women to receive what they obviously really want as well, is a state apology. And actually, the Taoiseach, when he was pressed on this today by Brendan Howland during Leaders and a couple of other TDs, and he did seem to indicate, I thought, that the apology is actually coming quite soon. I mean, very soon. He's, you know, he expressed our regret, whatever. And, you know, it's about that as well, because it's about, like, you know, it's about obviously the redress and making sure that they're okay. But I think it's also, we saw the, you know, how important the apology, state apologies were to, like, the Magdalene.
Well, then we saw how let down the Magdalene survivors felt, because that apology was not followed by the promises that came with.
And again, we saw, it took 4 years. We wonder why it took 4 years for a new tranche of documents to be handed over to this. You know, there's just always delay after delay after delay. So, you know, this is something that, you know, it could pave the way and just make an apology, get the redress in place, and let the report come out in its own time.
Okay, I'm going to have to leave it there. A couple of headlines before we go. The Irish Times: government strongly rejects EU hard border suggestion. The Irish Examiner: Ireland faces isolation with Britain as EU border mooted. The Times Ireland edition goes with Ireland set for a no deal border talks with EU. And The Guardian: blow to May as companies press Brexit panic button. Tonight's programme was produced by Sinead Egan. Research was by A.B. Philbin Bowman. The broadcast coordinator was David Phelan, and Mark McGraw was on sound. I want to thank my panel for tonight, and now it's over to Cathal Murray on Late Date.